Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're heading north to Alaska. Alaska is a super interesting state this cycle. Moderate Senator Lisa Murkowski is the only Republican senator who voted for impeachment who is also facing an election in 2022. The rest of them are up in later years, so they've got some time to recover. She's got a Trump-endorsed primary challenger in Kelly Shibaka, and Trump very much wants her head on a pike. He has been out to Alaska, I think about a month ago, to rally support for Shibaka. But there's an interesting wrinkle. They now have ranked choice voting in the state, which they just approved a couple of years ago. This is the first major election where it's going to feature prominently. And so this Tuesday's primary is actually, instead of it just being Murkowski versus Shibaka, who are the two Republicans, it's going to come down to the top four candidates, regardless of party, and they will advance to the general election. And the general election will then be decided by this ranked choice voting, where voters rank the candidates in the order they'd prefer. So the candidate with the fewest first place votes is eliminated, and then their votes go to their supporters' next highest remaining choices. And this continues until one candidate gets 50% of the vote. If that sounds confusing to you, I agree. We'll talk about ranked choice voting and what it means. But it could save Murkowski against this Trump-endorsed opponent, especially when they don't have a lot of Democrats who are really making waves. So this week we asked a mix of Republicans and former Republicans how they're thinking about the race. And there's also this other quick side plot in Alaska, which is that Sarah Palin is running for Congress. So we're going to talk about that too. But my guest today is the man, the myth, the legend, my friend, Bill Kristol. Bill, I know you're at the beach, so thank you for doing this today. Really appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and it's great to be with you on this tremendously successful podcast, for which congratulations. I think I was on the first episode, maybe, and then
the second,
and I've not been on since, which is why it's been soaring to great heights. And now we'll see if I can bring it back to earth a little bit. But anyway, it's great to be with you, Sarah, and it's okay to have an hour break from the family at the beach.
So I'm just going to kick off. So you and I, we move in a world of people who are concerned about the state of politics. And so we know a lot of people who kind of like this idea of ranked choice voting. I think Lisa Murkowski is a dying breed of Republican, which I admit would go to great lengths to preserve. And so I'm both somehow grateful that the ranked choice voting exists in her state, because I think it's going to help her considerably. On the other hand, I am bracing for how ranked choice voting plays out in the state. Even as I was going through the description of it, I am confused, I got to admit. Like, we know lots of people who think that ranked choice voting is like the thing that will save our politics, but I've never been able to quite get my head around it. What do you think about ranked choice voting?
I mean, I'm well disposed to it. I think it will be interesting how it works here in Alaska, because I don't think it's changed a result yet, at least not in a major race, as I recall. I mean, it's used in the New York City mayor's race, San Francisco mayor's race, which were both very close. But I think the leader ended up as the leader. I guess Maine is the one state, apart from Alaska, I think, that now has it. I think Susan Collins was somewhat helped, but I think, again, maybe she was ahead even without ranked choice voting in the general election. So it'll be interesting to see if it actually shapes a result and then what the reaction to that is. And also, as you say, how actual voters react to it in practice.
Well, in both of these groups, which again, they are Republicans and sort of former Republicans, like there was just mixed in some people who had always been Republicans, but Trump kind of pushed out of the party. We asked them what they thought about ranked choice voting. Let's hear what they had to say.
Some of the organizations that I've been a member of have boards. They're volunteer organizations that write open source software, and the software is organized by a board of elected individuals. A couple of those organizations used ranked choice voting for a couple of years for their board elections, and every organization that's done it did away with it after about four or five cycles. It was so confusing, and people just never understood the theory behind how to actually use it. I think it's a good idea in paper, but when it's actually used in the real world, it doesn't work.
All that ranked choice voting does is it lowers the number of people that are actually going to go out and vote, because especially with an older population, they get confused and will just throw it down, you know, or mismark the ballot because they don't understand what to do. And then that vote gets thrown out.
So I got to say that both the groups really didn't like ranked choice voting, but enough people in the state did because there was a referendum. And so people voted and they decided to choose this. But I think that for some reason, there were more people on the sort of the Democrat and independent side who seemed more disposed to it because we couldn't really find people in the groups who liked it. And the main thing that they were talking about was it could just like take a really long time to get a tabulation and for people to know who won, especially in Alaska, where I think they have to fly on little prop planes, like the ballots from here to there. Does it worry you at all, though, that this could cause more distrust, Bill?
I guess I'd make a couple of points. I mean, it shouldn't take really that much longer than just counting the ballots, which can take a long time, as we've seen in plenty of cases where there wasn't ranked choice voting, like in the 2020 election in some states and with mail-in votes and so forth. And in Alaska, has always been a bit of a slow count because of the dispersed communities. I don't think it should slow things down too much. I do think the first person whom you played the clip from had a commonsensical point, which will resonate with people, which is, I belong to a zillion different organizations, people will think, ranging from clubs to community organizations to local governments and so forth. Almost none of them use ranked choice voting. But I would say, in fact, if you think about it for a minute, what do places you belong to use? Probably you vote for four in the first round, they throw out the lowest candidate, and then have a second round of voting. And to say, isn't that how all the political conventions in the old days when there were multi-candidate ballots, right? The 12th ballot so-and-so wins in Virginia, where I live. That's what they did for the Republican convention. It wasn't ranked choice, I don't believe, but it was a series of ballots. And look, it does help certain kinds of candidates, we think, in the current circumstances at least, and hurt others. I'm generally well-disposed to it. I think in principle, it's a reasonable way to try to reflect popular sentiment a little better, but especially in a highly polarized situation, especially with partisan primaries, especially in the current situation of American politics. And therefore, those of us in sort of vaguely centrist-ish pro-democracy world tend to like it because we think it would lead towards better members of Congress or governors or mayors, better in the sense of broader support, less of a pure partisan appeal, less of an extreme appeal to the base. That's, of course, why other people will dislike it. It does bring home the truth that though some of these reforms aren't sort of principle, you might say, not partisan, they're electoral mechanisms, they always have, when put into practice, a certain practical or partisan or political impact. And in this case, it's not an accident that the people pushing it have been sort of centrist types concerned about polarization and extremism. I think it's reasonable to be concerned about polarization and extremism, so it's reasonable to push this kind of reform at this time. But it's also reasonable to remember that some of these reforms don't quite work out the way you hope, and some of them will work out better than others, and which of the different reforms that are available are the best ones in terms of the electoral system, I'm pretty agnostic about. But it was the Murkowski team, final point, if I'm not mistaken, that pushed this for the referendum. They were thinking ahead to 2022. So it's not unfair for the critics of it to say, well, this is just an attempt to save Lisa Murkowski's seat when she's unpopular with Republican primary voters. So that's a very partial description. Maybe a truer way to say it is it's an attempt to save the seat of someone who has been willing to break with the party and try to reflect the broader views of the majority of Alaskans and not just cater to the base. But either way, it's not an accident that Team Murkowski was very much in favor of putting in place ranked choice voting in this election.
Well, they wanted to save themselves probably the work of doing the write-in candidacy like right. They had to do a couple cycles ago where you have to teach everyone how to spell Murkowski, where, you know, if she loses the primary, she runs as an independent. I think for the people toiling in the laboratories of democracy and ranked choice voting and some of these different reforms, it will be closely watched to see how it works. And I mean works not in terms of the desired outcome, but works like functionally works and is satisfying to people.
Right. And it's kind of combining two tests at once, which is fine, but it's the open primary, which is itself a test. You could have an open primary without ranked choice voting. California has open primaries, top two in that case advance. In this case, it's an open primary with the top four advance, and then ranked choice voting on the final round. So just to be kind of technical, it's both ranked choice voting and an open primary.
Yeah. These groups were kind of pro-Murkowski, but I want to first sort of play Murkowski's pitch in this race to voters, right? She knows she's on the outs with a lot of the Republican primary voters, but I would say the kind of stuff she's saying is the stuff you can say when you're running in a general election from day one, right? Like that's how she sort of sounds. So let's listen to Murkowski's pitch here.
In this election, lower 48 outsiders are going to try to grab Alaska's Senate seat. for their partisan agendas. They don't understand our state. And frankly, they couldn't care less about your future. Who can best deliver for Alaska? That's what this race for the United States Senate is really about. Through my seniority, I get real results for our state. Every day, I work across party lines to strengthen our economy, expand our energy production, take care of our veterans, and invest in our critical infrastructure. I'm for Alaska, always. I'm Lisa Murkowski, and I approve this message. I'd be honored to earn your vote.
So Cheney's also, her primary, that is also Tuesday. But Liz Cheney's in a much worse position than Lisa Murkowski. It is partly because there's no ranked choice voting. And so Liz has to actively say to Democrats and independents, like, change your registration and vote in the Republican primary, which is harder than just having ranked choice where all the Democrats and independents can either put Lisa Murkowski as their first or second choice. So that's one difference. But the other difference, I would say, is that the campaign that Hageman is running against Liz is that Harriet Hageman is the pure Wyoming person. She's from Wyoming. She's of Wyoming. And that Liz Cheney is the carpet-bagging outsider who doesn't share Wyoming values. And so in Alaska, Murkowski is running as the Alaska values, the person from Alaska, and she's painting Kelly Shibaka as an outsider, although she doesn't even mention Shibaka, but talks about, you know, people outsiders are trying to steal the seat. And so I guess it really does seem that Alaska and Wyoming are similar in that the voters there are very specific and they have a very specific sense of place, right? There's like a whole ethos around like being a real Alaskan or a real Wyoming that is different from, like, you feel if you're from, like, I don't know, Connecticut. Like, you're just not as dedicated to your state. And, you know, there would be people in the groups who would talk about, like, having moved there, and they would be almost, like, apologetic about it because they know that they are outsiders. And so do you have any opinion on the difference between Murkowski and Cheney and how that's going to play out?
So in terms of sort of state pride, but also state uniqueness and a sense that you need people in Washington to watch out for your state. Wyoming has quite a bit of that, as a lot of small states do, a lot of the western states, the more recent states in the Union do, and not unreasonably, right? And Wyoming, I think, also has a tradition of therefore not, for example, defeating incumbents often and having people in office for a long time, the Alan Simpsons of the world, because they benefit the state. But Alaska is that tenfold or hundredfold. One of the two newest states, they still remember that, or they learned about it in school. Alaska in particular, Hawaii had some of this too, has had super long-term serving senators and congressmen who have done a huge amount for that state, or at least perceived to have done a huge amount for that state in terms of federal funds and making sure Alaska isn't forgotten and can get some special treatment in terms of appropriations bills. Ted Stevens was appropriations chair, if I'm not mistaken, and sent a lot of funds to Alaska, which either, depending on your point of view, were defensible. It was a state that, late to the Union, needed more help for infrastructure and so forth, or was poor. And then, of course, living in Alaska is just so different than even Wyoming, which is somewhat different from living in Virginia or Maryland or even the Pennsylvanias and Illinois of the world. So I do think the Alaska-specific appeal for Murkowski is very strong. And the Murkowskis have been in office a long time. Frank Murkowski was both governor and senator, and then Lisa Murkowski took his seat and has held it. So it's even more than the Cheneys in Wyoming, this is one of the few families that have held, you know, major political office in Alaska. So I think the Alaska appeal makes sense. I think she explicitly mentioned seniority, doesn't she? Which is sort of rare, I'd say, in these days in the anti-incumbent mood, the anti-Washington mood. Sometimes an incumbent's running for re-election, you barely know that person's the incumbent. You know, I hate Washington too. It's ignore the fact that I've been there for 12 or 18 or years or whatever. Murkowski really is, in a way, it's an old-fashioned campaign of I'm the incumbent, I've delivered for Alaska, you want me there to keep on delivering. Maybe you disagree with me on a few issues. You know, I'm not even going to mention what party I'm in, but you want me there because I'll be in that tradition of really watching out for all of us who are often forgotten about and neglected up here in the far away from everyone else.
And do you have any thoughts on Liz just while we're on this? I mean, we covered her a couple weeks back. We did the Wyoming groups. Even if there was ranked choice voting in Wyoming, I don't think that would be enough to save her. But do you have any like contrarian, oh no, Liz is going to be fine, you know, goodness prevails.
No, that would be truly contrarian in our day and age in American politics, that doing the right thing would prevail. I mean, it can. I think she could certainly tighten the race. The race could be tightening right now for all we know. And there could be some default back to Liz by people who are, you know, more pro-Trump than she is, which is 70% of Wyoming, and don't really like it that she's done so much with the January 6th committee, but have a sort of grudging respect. You could imagine the grudging respect reasserting itself on Election Day. But I think your point earlier on was very shrewd. I mean, that Liz doesn't benefit that much for all that the Cheneys have been a Wyoming institution and so forth. She's been so focused, and I think admirably so, on the January 6th committee and on saving the Constitution and the rule of law, that Hageman come after her as a more authentic, you know, she'll be listening to people in Wyoming, unlike Liz. So she can't really play that Murkowski card nearly as effectively. That, I think, means it is just more of a pure referendum on, do you admire Liz Cheney or are you loyal to Donald Trump? And that's a tough race for Liz Cheney. I don't rule out all of us being hugely surprised on Tuesday night. I do think the margin might be less than we've seen in some of these polls of 20 plus points. But yeah, it's very different. I mean, what Liz Cheney has done at the January 6th committee is, I can't even think of an instance like that in American politics, of knowing that it's going to cost you your leadership position in the House. She was number three in the House. I mean, she wasn't just like one of 27, quote, leaders, right? And really risk your reelection in what otherwise is totally a safe seat, to go on a committee, to accept Nancy Pelosi's appointment to the committee, to become the central figure in the committee. That's a whole separate discussion about what the implications of that have been. But I think it's been hugely beneficial to the January 6th committee and to the whole legitimacy and sort of focus of the investigation with regard to January 6th. And also the central figure in explaining how unacceptable it is to have Trump again as president. To go through all of that, that's just going to risk your standing as a Republican in a way that Lisa Murkowski's, and I don't mean to minimize these, but her occasional votes, you know, against Donald Trump or against Trump's positions or even the vote to impeach in the second time around, just not comparable to what Cheney's done.
Yeah, I think that this idea of seniority, which she says in her ad, is the kind of thing you heard from these voters. Like, to have the Republicans in the group be incredibly passionate about the federal funding, and that they, like, deserve the federal funding and, like, all the money that they need Alaska to get. Like, that is baked in really deep. And so they have a very sort of practical consideration about wanting somebody who has seniority, has pull in Washington, and can deliver things for Alaska. I want to play some of Murkowski's fans, of which she had some in these groups. One of the things you'll hear running through these is that they believe Murkowski is moderate, independent, and uniquely Alaskan. She seems to be trying to reflect back in these ads what she hears that people like about her. And one thing that struck me is how many people volunteered that they had seen her over the years. It's just a reminder that showing up in politics really matters, because they seem to feel like they knew her. Like, people would be like, I ran into her at the pizza place. So let's listen to some of these voters talk about Murkowski.
She got in by being picked by her father to take his spot, which nepotism never feels good to anyone. So she really had to prove herself, and everyone was watching her and watching every vote that she did. And I think she pretty much proved herself kind of as a middle of the roader, which I really appreciate, because the other Republican candidates that are running against Murkowski, either they've been a quitter, you know who I'm talking about, or they're so to the right that they want to, like, stop even having birth control sent in the mail. What about the condoms on the grocery shelves? I mean, give me a freaking break. Why is it always the woman that they want to lock up and make her have that baby?
At my age, she's always been a political figure here, so I don't have very much negative things to say. I mean, she's an Alaskan. She does what's good for Alaska. I did gain respect for her, though, when she voted differently than what Trump wanted, because she actually stood up to the big man. She's like, no, I don't feel like that's right, and I'm going to vote that way. I'm not going to follow the party. So I gained respect for her there. But for me, I respect her as a politician. I think she's done what she can, what is in her capacity to do, and I would vote for her.
She seems to be mostly independent. She's disappointed me a couple of times, but not very often. I think she's more moderate than most of the men that I see anyway, but I think she makes sense. I met her out at the pizza place one time, you know, just and talked to her, and she's very personable.
I've talked to her several times, and the vibe that I receive is that she's very honest. And, you know, that has got her in trouble a few times because she's blunt and she will speak her mind. I totally appreciate that, you know, she's been around for a long time and she holds her ground. And I appreciate that. And, you know, having a strong female representing Alaska in any aspect, it's good for me. So I really like her. That she's perfect? No. But that she's a bit controversial? Yes. And you have to be a politician, period. That's just how it is.
So that last woman actually voted for Trump twice. So I do think it bodes well. And I will say just overall, I don't know if you were struck by this, but there were people who were kind of down on Murkowski some or have sort of that annoyance of lifelong politician, nepotism. A bunch of people were talking about like, oh, her family's been in politics a long time. But when it like push came to shove and you're like, who are you going to vote for? Like the overwhelming majority was saying Murkowski. Did that surprise you?
I mean, most senators and members of Congress, governors would give a lot to have those kinds of comments unprompted, obviously, by voters, including some who might be quite annoyed at you if you voted to impeach the person they just voted for president. So it is a tribute to how strong she is and why she probably will survive this reelection. As you said, the only senator up, a couple have retired who voted to impeach, and then the others aren't up till 24 or 26. And of course, in the House, we've seen several either retirements or defeats with a couple still alive, both actually in these kind of open primaries in California and Washington, right? And then Cheney is the one in question. So she could be one of very, very few who survives an impeachment vote. If I were to worry, just to put on a pro-Murkowski hat and worry for a minute, I'd worry that she'll make it certainly to the final round, but I guess that'll be three candidates, maybe Chewbacca, the Trump-endorsed Republican, a Democrat, and Murkowski. And at that point, you can sort of imagine that could get to a pretty even three-way split, and you do need to be in second for the ranked choice to benefit you. You need to have the votes distributed to you, not from you. And I mean, I don't know, you get a nationalized election, 50-50 Senate possibility. Democrats maybe go back to their Democrat. Right now, she's getting a ton of Democratic votes, I would bet. More, I suspect, than Republican. And then, you know, Trump's up there and the Republicans are screaming and yelling about how they've got to be loyal to Trump, who's being persecuted by the FBI, et cetera. Some danger that she falls between both stools. But if she can just make it into second, basically, she presumably gets the other votes against either the Democrat, or more likely, I suppose, against Chewbacca, the Trump Republican. Now, you've talked to more people than I have about this race, I suspect. Is that their basic sense of it? I mean, that she ends up in a final against Chewbacca and the Democrats having selected her for second choice, then that puts her over the top?
Yeah, that's right. There's a couple different factors. So one is the number of independents that there are in Alaska, which is a lot. And so right now, like, we're literally only talking to Republicans and people who had been Republicans, but like were so mad about Trump. So they're a little bit of a mixed group. But like the fact that the Trump voters were even split on Murkowski, I think if you get into independents, she's already won before on an independent ticket. And so I think that helps her. I've done more than these groups. So we did these two groups, but I've done other groups. And actually, I did them much closer to the impeachment vote. And even then, in those earlier groups, they were much more mad at her, like much more acutely angry at her at that point, the Republicans. But they knew what committee she sat on. They understood how senior she was. And it was when the lights kind of went on for me that Alaska is one of the most specific states, because the idea that usually dominates where people are like, I want somebody new, I want fresh voices. And there was a little bit of that in here, but there was like a real hesitancy to give up the seniority that she has and her ability to deliver for Alaska that just isn't a factor in most of these other states. And then the third thing that I think is really important is the Democrats haven't really put up anybody that's getting any traction. You know, it's not like the Evan McMullen situation in Utah where they actively stood down, but there's nobody notable. And as a result, it feels like the Democrats have kind of quietly said, yeah, we're not going to put up anybody serious that would challenge Murkowski.
Once you get past this round, I've got to think she is going to caucus, presumably, with the Republicans and Mitch McConnell. And if the first round results suggest that, gee, I don't know, maybe the Democrat can squeak ahead of Murkowski into second place and then get some of the Murkowski votes as a ranked choice and win, if that's possible, it probably isn't. But if people start getting that in their head, you can imagine an awful lot of national Democrats saying, with all due respect to Lisa Murkowski, she's a nice person. And she did vote for impeachment, but she's ultimately a Mitch McConnell person, not a Chuck Schumer person. So it'd be interesting to see how that dynamic works. I'd be interested to watch on Tuesday night just how many votes she gets. She is really the remaining bulwark of seniority for Alaska in the United States Congress. And I think that pulls her through. But it will be interesting to see what percentage she gets. Are we talking about her getting to the second round with 30% of the votes, which you could say isn't so great for an incumbent, but it's a multi-candidate race. 40%, you know, squeaking into the final round with 23%. I think that'll be an interesting little snapshot. And what percentage of Democrats are willing to reward someone like Murkowski and not vote for the Democratic candidate?
Yeah, to your point, I mean, polling out of Alaska is very sketchy. Like, the last I had seen, so the Democrat in third is this guy, Pat Chesbro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were asking the group, like, no one had really heard of him. Now, granted, these are Republicans, but, like, doesn't seem to be picking up a ton of name ID in the state. And he was a very distant third in the last poll that I saw. But let's play a section, the group, I'm going to call the Murkowski meh, the people who are like, eh, about her. Listening to this group, like, this is why I actually think she's going to win. Let's listen.
She's got some seniority. She tends to vote the way I would, you know, if I were in Congress. She's irritated quite a few people in the state, but, you know, I'll still vote for her.
The time that she's been in is a benefit. That seniority really helps. But I agree too, you know, nepotism sucks. She did lose the primary. She got voted back in as a write-in, which proves that write-in candidates can win elections. But it's time for new blood, which is things we've said before.
She's middle of the road in voting, in performance, in pretty much everything. She's not horrible, and she's definitely not great.
The one thing that kind of lost a little bit of credibility with me as far as she goes is when she voted to confirm Ketanji Brown Jackson, which I know was kind of a hot button topic at the time. I mean, obviously she's going to vote how she wants to vote, and that's fine. I can agree with it or disagree with it, and it just is what it is. But that's been my thought about it. Otherwise, I don't have too much of a problem with her.
So in that group, two out of the four were definitely going to vote for her. Like, if the election were held today, they were going to vote for her. And I think, like, even the guy who was, like, talking about new blood, they didn't know anything about Chewbacca. You know, like, they're annoyed at Murkowski. They're annoyed at the dynastic politicians. You know, she's been there forever. But, man, it is not like listening to people talk about Cheney, where they're just, like, rip shit about how much they dislike her. Like, it's just much more, oh, I disagreed with her vote on Ketanji Brown Jackson. I don't know. That, to me, the level of intensity in their dislike for her just isn't there. And I think that, with the ranked choice, gets her through.
Sounds right to me. And yeah. we'll see on, I don't know if we'll see on Tuesday night. God knows when we'll actually know the Alaska returns. But probably we'll have some sense by Wednesday morning, I should think, of how it's going. Maybe Chewbacca will be in first place because she has that hardcore Trump support. But is she in a strong second place? Or I'm sure there'll be a lot of expectation setting and attempts to shape the narrative afterwards. So I think there's still a pretty dynamic and fluid situation in play between August 16th and November 8th.
Yeah, but the difference here is that unlike McCarthy and all the Republicans who lined up against Cheney and raised money for her opponent, like, McConnell's going to back Murkowski, right? Like,
yeah.
He will support her and that they will spend money in the race for her.
And they will have people on camera whom they will know that Alaskans like saying she delivers for Alaska, or even have a targeted message to Republicans saying, look, Lisa does a great job for you all. You'd be crazy to throw her out. Yeah, so I think there'll be heavyweights on both sides and heavyweight spending on both sides. Whether the Democrats come into play and how effective they think they could be, I think those are all interesting questions.
Yeah. You know, obviously, Murkowski has lost a Republican primary before. You know, I think she's always been a little controversial for the hardcore Republicans because she is such a moderate. So let's listen to some of the negative comments for the people who are totally out on her.
We already talked about term limits. I mean, the woman needs to go. Her daddy put her in the job. Then she lost the primary, and somehow they finagled her back into the Senate.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of her. I consider her to be what I say is like a squish Republican. She votes with the Democrats time and time again. She voted with the Democrats to confirm Justice Jackson. She voted with the Democrats to impeach Donald Trump. She voted with the Democrats to oppose the border wall, which as a Texan, I guess I'm Alaskan now, but as like a former Texan, the border wall was a huge deal. We were on the border of Mexico. We've talked about the immigration issues. I think she's not conservative enough and is really like borderline Republican, but oftentimes votes for the Democrats, and I'm ready to see her get out of office.
Do you remember when McCain was running and they were talking about the bridge to nowhere? It was actually a bridge to a Gravina Island in Ketchikan. And it's also where the Murkowskis had a huge development project. So Frank Murkowski was trying to get federal dollars for the people in the state to pay for a bridge out to Gravina Island so that they can develop their project.
So, you know, the familiarity can also breed contempt. I will say, you know, the first woman that you heard talking there, like, she was a super hardcore Trumper. And she made faces through the entire group at anybody who said anything nice about Murkowski. So I guess it didn't surprise me that she was out on Murkowski. I mean, just that sentiment was absolutely the minority opinion, where there was kind of one person in both groups that really were mad at her. And then in the rest of the case, they were either sort of meh or positive. But the Democrats were not registering in these groups. I think the final two candidates are likely to be Murkowski and Kelly Shibaka. And Shibaka, she worked actually at a bunch of federal agencies before moving back to Alaska. She is from Alaska, but spent a lot of time away. She is endorsed by Trump. But she also, and I think this might not have been as big a deal before, but she supports criminalizing mailing the morning after pill. And that was something people like were aware of and were unhappy about. And I just want to say, everybody you're about to hear from are two-time Trump voters. Let's listen.
Stay out of my sex life. That's one. I think the other is when I hear Trump endorsing someone, now it seems like it's almost like you're being endorsed because you found there was a voting discrepancy or the voting was rigged or stolen or something. And I'm like, if that's the only qualification, I don't think I'd want that albatross in my neck.
I like some about her and I dislike some about her. If it's true, if she's totally against birth control, condoms, anything else being delivered through the mail, Alaska is, with the exception of Anchorage and Fairbanks, the bigger cities, Alaska is a rural state. You get out to the villages, they've got to get everything mailed, shipped, blown in. Like I said, if it's true, because you can only believe so much of the hype that goes on at election time about one candidate, that I don't like about her.
Alaska is a very unique state. You need to be familiar with our issues. I mean, our people, we have a melting pot here in Anchorage. You have every nationality you can think of. And, you know, this is the last frontier. We're special. So you need to be aware of wildlife. I mean, all of that. And if you're not from here, I mean, I'm not going to disrespect her and say I don't take her serious, but I would have more respect if she was from here or have been here, you know, a period of time.
So, yeah, the idea that she spent much of her career outside of Alaska, like, that bothers people. I mean, it's always, I guess, the carpetbagger is a real thing. It's a real dynamic. But, like, in the Pennsylvania Senate race where Fetterman is just, like, crushing Oz over being from New Jersey in Wyoming, they're not even talking about Liz being on the Jan 6 committee. Like, the campaign that Hageman's running is that she's a carpetbagger who doesn't share Wyoming's values. And here, where it seems like Murkowski is able to at least define Shibaka a little bit as an outsider whose only qualification is that she's got Trump's endorsement. But the thing that interested me so much was the abortion issue, where it went from being never mentioned to now it comes up, and it comes up organically, especially among women. I think it's not an accident that all of the people who were hardcore endorsers of Murkowski were women. But to me, I think that is a renewed liability for Shibaka, the idea that she doesn't think people should get the morning after pill
through the mail. Now, it's not true about condoms, but the Plan B thing seems to be breaking through with people and seems like it could really hurt Chewbacca in this new environment.
Yeah, it sounds that way to me. And Alaska's always been a somewhat socially libertarian state, or more that way than you'd think of a typical Republican state being. And so I think it helps Murkowski even more. She's pro-life, but she's for all kinds of exceptions, and probably not even, I don't know that she's signed on to the notion, probably hasn't, that there should be federal legislation, let each state work it out. That's acceptable to a broad range of voters. I've always thought from the beginning, beforehand, I remember debating this with pro-life friends and acquaintances. I mean, this is going to lance the boil, go back to the states. It's not going to be an issue. It never has been. And I remember saying, I don't know. These things are unpredictable. And my instinct at the time, and I think I was right on this one for a change, I mean, was that this had all kinds of ramifications, because it's not just that you can just say, well, I like the decision or I don't like the decision. It's that, okay, well, what are you for? Are you for a federal law? What kind of federal law? If you're a state official, if you're running for governor, what exceptions are you willing to have? What about things that some parts of the pro-life movement will aggressively move towards, ranging from travel to day after pill and so forth, and banning those? And how strict is the health exception? And then you get these terrible stories about women, you know, with non-viable fetuses and so forth, and being put at risk because the doctors now are nervous that they can't perform the necessary operations. I've always thought this issue had much more potential to disrupt this election than I think a lot of other people did, certainly on the right, who were hoping it wouldn't disrupt what they thought was going to be a big red wave. I was always dubious about the red wave and kept pointing to the generic congressional ballot, which was sort of +2.5, +3 Republican when Biden was -15, and saying there's some decoupling going on. It's gotten much more radical now. Ballot's now even. Biden's picked up a tad, but it seems like the congressional race is now, and certainly the governor's races, don't you think, have their own momentum in which abortion is a real issue. I mean, in states like Michigan, it really is true that it will matter who you vote for governor in terms of what your abortion laws will be, where you have a Republican legislature that says at least that it wants to pass quite strict abortion restrictions. Well, Wisconsin has one on the books. The Democratic governor is against and says he'll veto any attempt to keep it alive and so forth. So, I mean, it's a real issue, especially for governors, but to some degree for federal offices as well. It's a live issue. It's not just a symbolic vote. Are you pro-life or pro-choice? We'll see how much that Murkowski can bring that to bear in Alaska. But I've got to think, if you're in Alaska, you'll know about her position on putting the day after pill in the mail. A lot of Alaskans will know that's Chewbacca's position by November 8th.
You're being a gentleman by not directly saying, Sarah, you were one of the people who had some skepticism about whether or not abortion would really shake up the political dynamic, because I was skeptical. And I think part of the reason, one, is just how big in the groups the economy looms. And so I think that I was like, yeah, but like, will it as an issue like literally change the trajectory away from what was previously, it's been improving somewhat, just like a really intensely bad feelings about the economy. So I was skeptical about that. But I think one of the things I didn't count on, this is why being in the political prognosticating business is so hard, is, you know, I always thought that it could be an issue if Democrats really prosecuted the case of extremism against Republicans. But I didn't know how much Republicans were going to help them on that front.
Right,
I mean, watching Republicans, because it's just sort of so politically stupid. So watching them, like, literally all talk about, like, yes, we want a federal ban. Or this example of the morning after pill. It's not even about abortion, right? Now you're telling women that they can't get something in the mail that presumably in Alaska, where they are far flung, as the woman said, you can get it in the mail. And rural healthcare is a big issue and a big deal in places like Alaska. And so I think that you were right. And just listening to the way it comes up now, there was a woman in the first group. I mean, it was like the first thing out of her mouth. And more we're hearing that, where people sort of volunteer it as an issue that is top of mind. And so it may be that the economy is like still the number one issue that people talk about, but the intensity with which people are feeling this issue is pretty serious. And I think that being against, you know, mailing Plan B is going to become a really big liability for Chewbacca.
But in general, I'd also say, look, for now, I think it's effective. It's still a long way till the general election and could subside. People could get reassured. Kevin McCarthy could announce, or McConnell could announce, they're not going to bring up a federal legislation. So suddenly your votes for Senate and for member of the House, become less abortion-related, presumably, if you really believe that they're not going to do anything in Washington. Some of the gubernatorial candidates could succeed in backing off, or state legislative candidates. So for now, I think it is having a real effect. This is still pretty fresh in people's minds. Debates have just begun on some of these things. They could be subsiding by October. Other issues could emerge. So it could be a bear market rally for the Democrats for now, so to speak, with this issue contributing. But it doesn't mean it necessarily will be quite as front and center in November. If I had to bet, I would say it will be, but it might not be.
Yeah. But again, I would just say the idea, if you're in Alaska, of like limiting anything that you're supposed to get in the mail, that seems like a normal thing that you should be able to get. My guess is that that freaks people out, because that is their sort of their line to how they get everything they need.
Well, it fits into the narrative, too, that she doesn't know Alaska, right? If you were a real Alaskan, you would know that everyone gets everything in the mail outside of Fairbanks and Anchorage. But she's been in Washington so long that she sort of assumes you just go to the CVS on the corner of 14th Street and P or something like that.
Right. So now that I've congratulated you for being correct about something, let's talk about, for dessert, something that you may or may not have been correct about. We'll see how you feel about it. But Sarah Palin, currently running for Congress, 13 years after resigning from the governorship. And, you know, back in 2008, before you and I knew each other, Jane Mayer wrote in The New Yorker about how you were one of Palin's most ardent promoters before she was selected for VP. You also called her your heartthrob. Is that true? I didn't know that. I hadn't seen that.
I don't remember that, but, you know, irony does not always translate, or not irony. It was like semi-serious, you know, a quarter serious, an eighth serious. Who remembers?
Well, before you offer any stories and or apologies, let's listen to how our focus groups are feeling about Sarah Palin now.
I actually know Sarah. She's crazy as a loon. I agree. She's a quitter. She's a terrible candidate. And I really hope she does not get elected on name recognition alone.
I like her as a person. She's friendly. She's fun, for those who haven't personally met her. But yeah, I mean, that sticks in everybody's craw. She quit. She doesn't have bad views, but if she doesn't have the want to stick to it, then that's not a good thing. You know, again, I like her as a person. I've joked with her and helped her do several things.
I know Palin, and I voted for her, but I wouldn't anymore. I think she quit on Alaska, and I'm just not interested.
Too much baggage. Weren't we made the laughing stock of the country on some of the...
Yes.
Bless her heart. I don't dislike her, but we, once again, we're looking for somebody on another level.
I was a little surprised. I mean, there was like only a couple Palin takers in these groups, and they were like the hardcore Trumpers. Were you surprised that your heartthrob wasn't getting much love from this group?
Not that much. The quitting was just, I mean, people do not accept that. I mean, it's one thing if you quit for some other, like a huge job, or maybe if you're a member of Congress and you quit to become a Fox News host, which a couple, I guess, did at times, you know, who cares who your member of Congress is? You vote for some other person from the same party and he or she votes the same way as the person you voted for. She was governor of Alaska. And she was actually a pretty dramatic choice when she won the governorship. And the reason people like me were open to the idea of her as McCain's VP is that she was a very popular governor in 2008 when McCain made the choice, partly popular because, ironically, she was kind of populist, but in a sort of good way. I mean, she took on the oil companies. She had Democratic support in the state legislature for some of her key legislative bills, I think especially this one taking on energy. And so she was a little bit of a sort of bipartisan, fresh face, different populist type. She turned out to be not up to it, period. I mean, that was just a matter of hoping that she would turn out to be more substantive and more impressive than she was. But the campaign didn't help her, the general election campaign, obviously, where she didn't do great. Funny, if you go back and look at the debate with Biden in the campaign in the general election, she held her own more or less, actually. I had been for Lieberman first. It wasn't going to be Lieberman. I thought McCain should throw the long ball and take Palin. He did. Probably a mistake. And I apologize for that, I guess, as far as I played a tiny role. But yeah, the quitting, I think, really damaged her up there. For the rest of the country, it was like, I don't know, if she quits, she's going to do some other stuff. But you elect her as governor. You go through the campaign. There's a certain amount of ridicule you absorb, in a sense, because she's your governor. And now she's being fairly or unfairly, you know, maybe fairly, it turned out, portrayed as sort of not up to national office. And then she just quits on you. I think that stuck. On the other hand, I don't know, you followed it a little more closely than I have. Are we so certain she's not going to win on Tuesday?
No, I'm not certain. I'm not. I am less certain, though, after listening to these groups. I actually assumed, for the reason that the gentleman suggested that on name recognition alone, she would just have a big edge. That being said, I had sort of forgotten about the quitting until literally every person talked about it in the groups. You're right to emphasize it. They all called her a quitter. And other people were talking just about how she became like a reality star and like became kind of just like a celebrity. And so she's a nationalized political figure, which they just do not seem super into down there. I think sounded like they found her embarrassing. And
I mean, the quitting just, I mean, I remember at the time, like I still was vaguely loyal, certainly loyal to McCain, vaguely loyal to the McCain-Palin ticket, and therefore vaguely loyal to Palin in, I think it was maybe summer, June or so of 2009 when she quit. And I remember, like, as I say, trying to defend it for like a day and then realizing this is, you can't defend this. I mean, if she doesn't want to serve a second term, fine. Just announce you're not going to run for re-election in 2010. You think you've done a good job, but you have other opportunities and, you know, whatever, you a lot of good successors. To quit 2.5 years into your term when you're in perfectly good health and there's no reason to. I mean, I almost can't literally think of another case of this in American politics, you know? So unless you're going to be to the cabinet or something, or is there some real reason you have to? You're right. I was struck listening to the focus group how much that stuck in people's craw, which was a slap in the face to the state, I think, as well as a reflection on her character, according to those voters.
Yeah. Just while we're talking about Sarah Palin, because I get such vivid memories. You know, you talk about her debate with Biden and her holding her own. I actually have like burned into my brain the first speech she gave, because I remember being very interested in her. You know, she'd been like a basketball player. There's lots of like hometown stories that people were telling about her where she sounded pretty interesting. And I had never heard of her. And I remember the big stage and I remember her walking across it. And I have this like thing where I have total stress for any woman walking across like a very buffed floor in heels. Like I just like I am like tense for them and I'm just like want them to be okay walking. Like I remember she had this like long walk to the lectern. She's going to give a speech by herself, kind of introduce herself to the country. And it's where she did the hockey mom thing. And was just getting just wild cheers from the crowd. And I remember liking her a great deal based on that one speech, like just thinking like, wow, this is cool. And also just like having a woman, it was just, I hadn't seen it. It hadn't been there for my lifetime. It was exciting. Like, I think that the original theory of the case, and I guess I wonder, and maybe you could tell me, the person that we see now, she sort of strikes me like maybe she wasn't always like this. And that at the time when she was governor and still sort of striving to be like a good, responsible person, like, was she always the loon that they're talking about? Is she always the crazy person we see today? Or did the celebrity and the shock of the national spotlight change her? Or do you think she was like this?
I mean, some of both, I guess. Just two things. I was in the convention and in the room when she spoke. Matt Scully, who was her main speechwriter for that speech, is someone who had worked for me many years before with Dan Quayle. And so I had a drink with him late the night before, and he said, it'll be a good speech. She'll come through. And Obama just had his convention in Denver, huge drama, you know, and sort of display and the Corinthian columns and all that stuff. And we were desperate for McCain to have some shot in the arm. And it was terrific. I mean, at the moment, it was terrific. I'm perfectly willing to acknowledge that, A, she wasn't up to it ultimately, and B, even later in the campaign or even a week or two later, it started to go south. But that moment was pretty memorable, and certainly to be in the hall and the excitement that McCain had trouble generating, you know, during the primaries and after the primaries before the convention was there. My impression, I'd met her like only twice before she was nominated, once on a cruise, a weekly Santa cruise to Alaska, where she heard we were coming. And shrewdly, I would say, as a politician, invited a few of us over to lunch in the governor's residence, where she was very charming. One or two of the little kids were running around, and it was a very casual talk. Unlike a lot of politicians, she didn't try to give us a stump speech about what she was trying to do in terms of policy. Maybe that, in a way, is a weakness, you could say, in retrospect. But a lot of family talk, and what's it like up here, and what does she recommend we do for the day or two we were still had in Alaska, and that sort of thing. And I remember thinking, you know, she's obviously young and relatively inexperienced, but I think of her as VP at this point. This was the summer of 2007, but this is a real possible star potentially on the national stage. Alaska's so far away, it's hard to get from there to the national stage. But I thought, well, if anyone could, this unusual woman, you know, seemed like in a good way populist. And I will say, Governor could become a star. I think the weaknesses were probably there if I had spent more time and if I wanted to look harder and be more skeptical and have my usual jaundiced eye, but I probably was a little bit of wishful thinking there on my part.
Yeah. I remember I can't remember where I was, but I was at some conservative dinner. And it just so happened that I was sitting at the table with her husband, Todd, who I believe is now her ex-husband. And so at some point, Sarah Palin came over and said hi. And she and I stood up and took a picture together. And it ended up on the front page of The Washington Post. Oh. You know who else is in it? It's Tim. It's me and Tim Miller. And like one other person. And we're all in this, like, you know, our arms around Sarah Palin. And it's just funny.
I didn't see that picture. How is that not prominently?
I don't know. I've got it somewhere.
Behind you when you're on national television and, you know, giving being interviewed and when you're chatting with Chris Hayes or, you know, or Nicole Wallace or something. I don't know. That's I look forward to seeing that. You and Tim both. Wow. Best-selling author Tim Miller.
That's right. That's right.
Fantastic.
Well, I appreciate you indulging the little Sarah Palin talk. Bill Kristol, thank you for joining me on the Focus Group podcast. And thanks to all of you for listening here another week. We got some really good episodes coming up as we roll through these primaries. And soon we're going to get to the general election. So we will be back next week and do this all over again. Bye-bye.